106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
The Blues Brothers. How did sunglasses become so cool? Just think of Lolita and her heart-shaped shades, Jack Nicholson in any paparazzi picture ever, and even the former Prime Minister Paul Keating on the cover of Rolling Stone peering over the top of a pair of Wayfarers. Why is this and how did it come to be? Vanessa Brown lectures in design and visual culture at Nottingham Trent University in the UK. She's the author of Cool Shades, The History and Meaning of Sunglasses. Vanessa, welcome. This is a fascinating book.
Thank you.
Now, you point out that sunglasses as we know them didn't really exist before the 20th century and therefore they're intrinsically associated with modernity and urban life. Yeah. But before this, eye contact between strangers had become taboo by around the 18th century in Europe, at least. Why was that?
It was largely due to the growing awareness of the self as a stranger, and it was taboo for people to make eye contact with one another if they didn't know each other in a public place. And there's a really good quote, I think, that the author who wrote about this said that you weren't supposed to make eye contact with a stranger who enters a public room for fear of shocking his modesty and dismounting his assurance, which I think is great. This idea that you, in some way, you occupy a private space. You know, we think of that now as personal space. People talk about that very easily. But I think that was probably a relatively new concept then, you know, brought about by being in contact with people that you didn't know. And Irving Goffman later on, in the middle of the 20th century, said that modern citizens developed all kinds of special behaviours in everyday encounters in the street. So, and one of them was this idea of civil inattention, that you don't look directly at people that you don't know.
Now, modernity and the city in particular was quite sort of jarring to the senses.
So loads of writers who were trying to get to grips with what city life was like noted how intense, how chaotic, how kind of scary city life was, especially once, you know, mechanised travel and forms of entertainment, you know, and graphics. So there's posters everywhere, window displays, people just making noise, people street sellers and stuff. The idea was that it was a place of overstimulation. And in particular, an amazing writer, Zimmel, he said that you kind of left with two possible responses in that setting. You can either become what he called neurasthenic, was kind of like a nervous wreck, or you can become blasé, become hardened to it all. And I think that one of the interesting things is that looking blasé became something to be proud of, because it kind of indicated that you're at the cutting edge. Because if you were so used to these really intense environments that they no longer bothered you, that suggested that you were, you know, at the forefront of these kind of developments and involved in the most extreme forms of life that the future was allowing. And I think it's still like that today, to show that you're competent with things that are new, whatever they might be, is a way of demonstrating that you're on top of any situation and a kind of social superiority.
At the turn of the century, we see the rise of mechanised speeds, cars, motorbikes, planes, and this led to the rise of goggles.
Yeah, I think actually sunglasses probably got their connotations of heroic detachment and those associations with modernity, not just through being worn in the city, because that came later, but initially by being an accessory that was worn by people travelling on the new railways, travelling on bicycles. Some explorers wore them, and obviously First World War fighter pilots wore goggles, which they didn't really look like sunglasses now because they were much chunkier and much bigger, but they did eventually evolve into the form we know as aviators today.
And so by 1925, we see an illustration on the cover of Vogue, a woman leaning against an open-top car with goggles resting on her forehead. This is really, I guess, this point where they're truly a fashion item.
Yes, that's probably the first moment that that kind of accessory is perceived as desirable enough to make it into a fashion illustration. She's not actually wearing them. It was part of the paraphernalia of a cool activity, which obviously for women in the 20s, driving was incredibly audacious, really. You know, obviously it was elite women that could do that, and it was all part of the naughtiness of androgyny that was coming through then. This idea that women might be mobile was quite shocking, that they would engage with technology in a constant way, even more shocking. And yes, definitely avant-garde in terms of fashion.
Well, this brings us to Hollywood, where sunglasses really came into their own. Now, you write that there's a convention of, in popular film, that the moment when sunglasses come off, it signposts some kind of shift. What's that shift?
Sunglasses are actually very often used in film to suggest that the character is in some way duplicitous, not to be trusted, could potentially be hiding something, obviously. So when people take their sunglasses off, it often suggests that all of a sudden we are getting access to what is really going on inside their mind, because we are allowed now to look into the windows of their soul and see what they think. Mm. So it could be used to suggest a moment of sincere communication, but depending on the rest of the characterization and the facial expression, sometimes it can be used in a terrifying way too, because maybe all of a sudden, having been slightly hoping that maybe they're not looking at you because you can't see the direction of their gaze, they might take the sunglasses off and you realise that they are looking directly at you, and you've suddenly become that target of curiosity that could be dangerous.
Yes, there's also those coquettish moments, the 1962 Lolita film with those heart-shaped glasses, and and the 1983 Risky Business, Tom Cruise doing the same things.
Yeah, that is very much kind of the idea of seduction by the giving and taking away of access. And the image of Lolita, and that's become an iconic image that suggests to us this sort of precocious sexuality and this kind of idea of seduction. Mm. Think about as well the image of Audrey Hepburn, that iconic image of her in The Dark Wayfarers from Breakfast at Tiffany's. When she takes off her glasses, you can't help but be stunned by the vulnerability of her beautiful, big, quite immature looking eyes. You know, it really does dramatize just how inviting her eyes actually are as well, because they've been covered for so long.
Mm. The sunglasses created a kind of not available message, and you describe it actually as an anti-gaze. But this is interesting because it has been taken on by many celebrities as a signature look, and I think of currently the Vogue editor Anna Wintour, the German designer Karl Lagerfeld. And amusingly, in the book, you say that both of these people are seen observing fashion, even Karl Lagerfeld selecting fabrics with his sunglasses surely can't be easy. And also U2's Bono, who has made sunglasses a signature thing. What do you think they're saying?
Well, what the image of Bono does and has done over the years is probably quite different to Anna Wintour and Karl Lagerfeld. Both of them are in positions of power, and the, as you picked up on this kind of idea of the anti-gaze, that when we look at somebody in dark glasses, we naturally assume that they can't see us. We know rationally that they probably can see us, but because what we see is blackness, we tend to assume that they're not looking at us, and that that could mean that they don't care about us. And that's borne out by everything that somebody at the top of their game in the fashion industry is all about. They don't care what anyone else is doing. They are setting the trends. I mean, I think there's an added bonus for someone like Anna Wintour as well, because she's so frequently photographed on the front row of catwalk shows, and her reaction to the shows can make or break a collection, a designer, a brand. But maybe she doesn't want people to know right away what she thinks.
So what are we seeing now? Sunglasses are more popular than ever, from gangster rap to babies in strollers. Is their meaning still evolving?
Yes, I think it most definitely is. I would have expected by now for sunglasses to have stopped being cool and not to be as popular, because mostly cool things can't last. If they're cool today, they can't be tomorrow. And that's one of the amazing things about sunglasses. And I think it is entirely because of the way they negotiate eyes and the gaze that they always will be useful in demonstrating this kind of idea of detachment. Now we're seeing a lot of revivals of different styles from the past. You can be ironic with them, you can be playful, you can kind of deliberately suggest all of these things from the past. Because I think the problem with sunglasses is that they have become associated with trying to be cool. And we know, if there's one thing we know, it's that if you try to be cool, you won't be. So the sunglasses, it's dodgy now. You have to be careful. You've got to wear the right pair in the right way, and you've got to carry the rest of it off. Otherwise, everybody knows, oh, there they go, trying to be cool. And, you know, especially don't wear them indoors. Unless you are Anna Wintour or Karl Lagerfeld.
And if you wear them at night, don't sing about it.
Indeed, indeed.
Oh, it's so hard to be cool. Thanks so much, Vanessa. It's an extraordinary exploration of the world of sunglasses.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Vanessa Brown lectures in design and visual culture at Nottingham Trent University in the UK, and her book is Cool Shades: The History and Meaning of Sunglasses. Well, that's it for The List. I'm Cassie McCullough. See you next week.